We don't know much yet, ma'am.
That seems to be your pattern, she said, not knowing much.
It's a tough job.
So is mine. So is everyone's. Life's frigging tough. I wish my kids could learn that. They're growing up expecting everything to come their way. At least Brett is. He's spoiled. Chelsea, for her, everything's a challenge. I'm not sure she really understands what she's up against. A motel? What are you really telling me, Lieutenant?
Just that, ma'am.
I know about motels, what they connote. Are you denying that?
Milo said nothing. Felice Corvin hugged herself and glanced at the stairs again.
Ma'am, would you like us to tell the children?
Us? She said. The two of you are a team? Or does that just mean you want Dr. Delaware to tell them? Psychological sensitivity and all that.
To me.
You want to make them psychiatric patients? No thanks. They're mine, and I'll handle it.
A thump from above. Felice Corvin said,
When I'm ready.
We sat there. Her grip on her own shoulders tightened.
I am so angry. One friggin' damn thing after another, it just keeps... Okay, let's stop beating around the bush. Was it with a whore?
Milo said, Did Chet make a habit of...
I have no idea about Chet's habits, other than the ones he displayed here.
She huffed.
He was gone all the time. Business! I'm not stupid. I know what men are like. I know what Chet was like. He didn't give a damn about anyone but himself.
Is there a specific woman he was...
She laughed. Clawed air yanked on her hair.
Why don't you just log on to whores.com or something and run your finger down the list?
So you were aware?
I was aware that Chet had the sexual scruples of a Wolverine in heat, and that when he returned from his business,
she shaped quotation marks,
he paid even less attention to me than usual, which was pretty minimal to begin with. Are you understanding? His needs were being tended to. A while back, I decided to confront him, so he wouldn't give me a disease. Of course, he denied it, but I told him, if you ever infect me with something, I'll kill...
She cut herself off, literally with a hand over her mouth. When her fingers dropped, her lips formed a crooked, icy smile.
That was a figure of speech. I certainly didn't leave my children last night, drive over to some disgusting motel I had no idea existed in the first place, and shoot my husband. I've never fired a gun in my life.
Milo nodded.
You agree? Said Felice Corvin. Don't tell me you're not considering it. Isn't the spouse the first person you look at? Am I one of your friggin' suspects? Fine, do your thing. I have nothing to hide.
She charged to her feet, stomped to the entry hall, raised a fist.
I am so, so angry. It never stops.
Milo said,
What doesn't?
The fist waved.
Crap doesn't. The endless flood of crap and issues. Now I have to go tell my children something that's going to screw them up forever. How are they ever going to have faith in the future?
She covered her face with both hands, fought tears, and lost. I guided her back to the living room. Her body stiffened when I touched her elbow, but she returned with me and sat in the same place. I fetched tissues from the powder room. She dabbed her eyes dry, sat with her hands in her lap, a chastened child. Milo said,
Ma'am.
Felice Corvin said,
I apologize, Dr. Delaware. I'm not one of those people afraid of therapists. I believe in therapy. Used to be a teacher. Wanted so many kids to get help who never did. Then I had my own, and I'm sorry. I've been rude to you, Dr. Delaware, and I want to explain.
Not necessary.
It is necessary. I need you to understand.
It was nothing personal. I'm sure you're a good psychologist. But a bunch of your colleagues did nothing for my daughter, and some of them made her feel much worse. So I lost faith. I'm sorry for being so angry and for being such a pain in the butt. And now it's really hit the fan. And what the hell am I going to do?
More tears, followed by a lopsided smile.
During challenging times, one needs especially to be gracious. My mother always said that. Her mother, too. I told them I agreed.
I do.
Tears trickled down her cheeks.
I've obviously failed that challenge miserably.
Milo said, It's a terrible thing to go through. Again, we're so sorry.
I believe you, Lieutenant. I really do.
There are questions we need to ask about Chet.
Chet, said Felice Corvin. Who knows anything about Chet?
She shrugged.
Maybe I'll miss him.
Milo managed to get the basics in. Could she think of any possible link between her husband and Hal Braun? Not to my knowledge. Did Chet have any business dealings in Ventura, Oxnard, or Santa Barbara? I know nothing about his business. Had he been involved in exceptionally bitter business conflicts, denied claims that led to personal attacks? I have no idea. I believed her, and from the looks of it, Milo did as well. Separate lives. What he didn't bring up were Chelsea's night moves, the possibility of contact with Trevor Bitt. We'd discussed broaching the topic, agreed it was a bad idea, no sense overwhelming the widow and alienating her completely. We got up to leave. Felice stood, too, reaching out and grazing my fingertips. She moaned.
Oh, Dr. Delaware, could you tell my children?
Chapter 20 Brett and Chelsea came down the stairs, led by their mother. She said,
Sit, guys,
in a voice working far too hard to be calm. Surprisingly, neither young Corvin seemed to be alarmed by that. Chelsea plopped down and stared into space. Brett scratched behind his ear and mumbled,
What?
Felice said, Tuck in your shirt in front, Brettie. It's half in, half out.
Huh?
Your shirt, honey. Tuck it in.
Baffled, the boy complied.
Thank you, sweetie. Okay, here we go.
Sick smile.
Okay. Okay, there's something you need to hear. And Dr. Delaware, you remember Dr. Delaware? He's going to tell it to you.
Brett's mouth gaped as he squinted at me. Chelsea didn't react. I edged my chair close enough to look at both of them simultaneously. Brett's eyes bounced. Chelsea's were still, but unfocused. I'm sorry to be giving you really bad news. Your father passed away last night. Brett's lips stretched, taking an eerie emotional journey from grin to something toothily grotesque and feral.
What?
He shouted. I said, I'm sorry, Brett. Your dad... He shoved his fist toward me.
Fucking bullshit!
I wish it was, Brett.
Fucking bullshit! Fucking bullshit!
Chelsea said...
It's not.
Everyone looked at her. She looked at me.
You said it, so it's true.
Not a trace of emotion on her pale, soft face. Her brother lunged at her. I got between them.
You cunt fucking bullshit!
The boy let out a wordless roar. His body vibrated. Tears shot from his eyes. Projectile grief. Stumbling out of the living room, he vaulted up the stairs, punching the banister, swearing, screaming. Felice said,
my poor baby,
and went after him. Chelsea said,
cry, baby.
A couple of minutes later, Felice returned alone, trembling.
He needs some private time.
To me.
That's okay, right?
I said, of course. During her mother's absence, Chelsea hadn't uttered a word, her only response a head shake when I asked her if she had any questions. Felice said,
you okay, hon?
Uh-huh.
It's a terrible thing, Chels.
The girl shrugged. Din from above, something colliding with plaster over and over. The ceiling thrummed. Felice said,
he's throwing his basketball.
Normally, I wouldn't allow it. Her mouth twisted. Milo said,
this isn't a normal situation.
Felice turned to Chelsea.
Honey, if you have any questions for these gentlemen, now's the time to ask.
Uh-uh.
You're sure?
I have a question, Mom. For you.
Of course, darling. What?
Am I still going to school today?
Felice's head retracted.
No, Chels. Why don't you go upstairs, too? But please, do not go into Brett's room, okay?
No way, said the girl. It smells.
When she was gone, Felice said,
this is unreal.
Milo said,
is there anything you can tell us that might help us figure it out?
I wish there was, Lieutenant. At least one thing I don't have to worry about is money. Chet had an excellent income, I'll grant him that, but the truth is I brought most of the funds into the marriage.
She looked away.
My parents were professors, but they invested extremely well, and I'm an only child. So, in case you feel like looking for life insurance policies, we don't have any. At least I never took any out on Chet. What he chose to do, who knows? I'm sure you noticed he did his own thing. A lot of men would kill.
Sick smile.
What I'm getting at is, I have nothing to hide. Anything you want in terms of paperwork is yours.
Appreciate it, ma'am. We could use access to Chet's phone accounts and his credit cards right now.
Give me some time to get you the details. Say, by later today?
That would be great. Thanks for the cooperation.
Why wouldn't I cooperate? I want you to find whoever did it. Chet and I had our differences, but no one deserves...
She threw up her hands, letting one settle along the side of her face.
A motel. He'd hate ending up like that. With Chet, it was five-star this, five-star that. Getting upgraded to a suite. I grew up with a trust fund, but couldn't care less.
She exhaled.
Who to call? Chet's parents are gone, but he does have a brother in New Jersey. Harrison. He's an optometrist. They're not close, but Harrison needs to know. I'm sure I'll think of other issues.
She walked us to the door. Milo stepped outside, but I said, a minute, Lieutenant, and remained in the entry with Felice. He looked at me, said, sure, and kept going. Felice Corvin said,
what is it, Doctor?
If at any point you feel that I can help, please call.
If I feel that, I will. Thank you. That's kind, she said. Right now, I don't feel much of anything. Kind of fuzzy in the head, like I'm in some sort of felt straitjacket. Is that normal?
It is. I turned to leave. She clawed my sleeve.
Dr. Delaware, what if I don't end up feeling anything? Does that make me horrible or abnormal? Will it get in the way of helping my kids?
I said no to all of that. She stared at me. I said, really? Just take it at your own pace.
It's nice of you to say that, but I wonder. Maybe I won't feel. I sure don't now.
Maybe that does say something about me. Felice, to feel loss, there has to be something to miss. She flinched.
Ouch.
It's been that obvious, huh?
Yes, of course it has. I haven't exactly been subtle about our relationship. That's the way I was brought up. Say what's on your mind. Some people find me abrasive. I sometimes try to soft pedal, but you are what you are. And with Chet, all these years.
Her hand tightened on my arm.
The crazy thing is, Doctor, I really loved him. In the beginning, it wasn't just some half-baked thing. There was passion. At that point in my life, I thought he was perfect. Exactly what I needed.
A take-charge guy.
Take charge, self-confident, boisterous,
sense of humor.
All the things I wasn't back then. He could talk to anyone about anything at any time. I thought that was amazing. It let me relax and sit back if I didn't feel like talking. I grew up listening to my parents and their professor friends, every topic picked over until the life had been squeezed out of it. Chet was different. He painted with a broad brush. He thought my parents and their friends were pretentious eggheads and told me so. At the beginning, I liked that, how he took charge of me in every way.
Spots of color lit up her cheeks.
What I didn't realize was that he wouldn't wear well. It didn't take long.
But you stayed together.
She smiled. I could say it was for the sake of the kids, and that's partly true. But mostly you get to a point, and it's inertia. Why bother? I'm not a people person, Doctor. I find dealing with people exhausting. They weary me when they get too emotional. So after so many years together, I just didn't see the point of upsetting the apple cart.
She looked down, let go of my sleeve.
Oh, I've wrinkled your jacket. Sorry.
I smiled. I'm sure it'll recover. She smoothed down the fabric anyway.
My little speech must have sounded pathetic.
No.
Whatever, Doctor. Thanks for your offer. Hopefully I won't need to take you up on it. And I do want Lieutenant Sturgis to catch whoever murdered my husband. I'm going to think of him that way. My husband. I'm going to think about him like he was in the beginning. Maybe I'll feel.
Chapter 21. True to her word, just after 2 p.m., Felice phoned Milo's office and left the details of Chet's cell phone and his credit card accounts. I was there, and he put her on speaker.
Thanks, Miss Corvin.
Whatever helps, Lieutenant.
How are the kids?
Brett's taking it really hard. I haven't seen him cry since he was in diapers. He and Chet had this macho thing going. He stopped, but now he wants to be by himself, and I respect that. I did manage to get some food in him. I'm telling myself it's probably a healthy reaction, getting in touch with his feelings. We'll work it out. Hope the information will be useful.
Me too, ma'am. How's Chelsea?
Chelsea's being Chelsea. The sad truth is she and Chet were never close. Not that he was fine with her. He accepted her. She actually seems okay. At least, as far as I can tell, she's okay. Thanks for asking.
Milo clicked off.
Checked with Petra before we set out. Nothing from the canvas. Chet doesn't seem to have bought the wine near the motel. Raoul did find an image of a Range Rover heading east on Franklin a few minutes before Chet checked into the Sahara. No view of the tags, too dark to see who was inside. It tells us what we already know, but no harm having a timeline. In terms of the woman with him, still nothing.
He looked at the credit info Felice had provided. Already have one of these cards. Amex Platinum. Issued by Connecticut's surety for the business expenses of their West Coast regional manager. Got it from his secretary. She was appropriately shocked by the news.
had no idea who the boss partied with or if he had a special place he bought wine. What else? No luck with GPS on the rover. It's equipped with a system, but it's non-operative. Corrosion. Our car guys say it happens.
I said, a guy who travels all the time with no electronic guide because he failed to fix it? Maybe he sticks to the familiar. Like a woman he saw regularly whose address he didn't want on record.
Good point. Okay, let's learn more about our new victim.
He phoned in subpoena requests, got eventual cooperation from the credit companies, resistance from the phone provider demanding a written application on proprietary forms supplied by its own legal department. A patient tone of voice, as he kept requesting supervisors, didn't help, nor did enough pleases and thank yous to appease the sycophant gods. No hint he'd been giving the one-finger salute throughout most of the conversation. He hung up, said,
"Bastards! If Nguyen can't facilitate, I'll go over in person and fill out their damn forms. Enough info on Chet, something's got to break. Hey, aren't you proud of me? Still believing in happy endings?"
I said, "That's just realism."
"What do you mean?"
"Your solve rate. A whole lot more success than failure." He put his hands over his ears.
"Positive thinking? Irish heresy."
Warming up from his desk chair, he put on his jacket, knotted his tie.
"Time for nutrition. Let's go dig potatoes out of the cold, hard sod."
"No corned beef sandwich?"
"Hmm," he said. "Triple-decker, extra mayo, 3 greasy sides and a nice frosty lager? You're right, much better. Something to feel seriously guilty about."
Chapter 22 Bert's Deli, a few blocks from the station, was the obvious destination. Aromas streaming from a new Italian place, 30 feet closer, snagged him first. The interior was hard black leather and perforated metal. Milo ordered without looking at the menu. The waiter said,
"Sure, Lieutenant Sturgis. You, sir?"
When he left, I said, "You two play bocce together?"
"Better game," he said. "I tip big. He pays his rent."
Mushroom and sausage pizza, salad, baked ziti, iced tea, all for two. When I'm with him, I usually don't eat much. This time, I was hungry. As I picked up my second slice of pizza, he said,
"Look at you. Gastric juices stimulated by anything in particular?"
"No breakfast."
"Huh. Let me ask you something. Chelsea being numb about Chet is one thing. But the way she made fun of a brother was pretty damn cruel. Is she more than just a dull kid? Actively hated Daddy for a reason?"
I said, "Chet abused her? There's no evidence of it, but I guess anything's possible."
"It's not fun to think about, Alex, but it could explain Braun. What if Mr. Do-Gooder was covering up nasty tendencies? What if he and Chet bonded over them?"
"Chet pimped his own daughter out to Braun?" I pushed my food away.
He said, "Yeah, it's gross, sorry, but I have to think of everything. Maybe it wasn't that overt. Just photographs. Covert videos. Those assholes love to share, right? What if Felice found out, went nuclear, and decided to take care of business? Phase one was luring hubby's sicko buddy somewhere with promises of more nasty. Instead of that, Braun got a hired pro who defaced and de-handed him and dumped what was left in hubby's personal space. A message to Chet, just like you've been saying all along."
I said, "If so, it didn't get through to Chet. He didn't seem the least bit scared."
"That's because he was a narcissist, shallow, a psychopath, whatever. Couldn't imagine anyone aggressing against him. Maybe he didn't even realize it was Braun. Now, if that's the case, and I'm Felice, that would piss me off even more. So I set up phase two and take care of the problem once and for all. She's got the money for a couple of serious contracts. Just told us so."
It's a theory, I said.
But not much of one.
If you find evidence.
Talk about role reversal. Lost your appetite?
Full.
Yeah, sure, he said. Here's a diet idea. The paleo stress method. Make a hell of an infomercial.
By 5 p.m., we were back in his office, checking our messages. Thin gruel for both of us. He read and cursed and clicked off. I said, waiting for something?
I asked Reed to check for life insurance. Nothing for Chet or Felice, though Chet's company took out a policy on him that pays them if he attempts to sever relations prematurely. Wonder if they'll try to claim. That would be some court battle, huh? Casualty insurance company up against a life insurance company?
I said, Godzilla versus Rodan.
More like Hitler versus Stalin.
At 4:55, Raoul Biro called to say no video of the rover had shown up anywhere, but he had located the liquor store that had sold Corvin the wine.
Fancy place, Sunset and La Cienega. Transaction was at 6:13 p.m. Owner's daughter was working the register. She didn't have to find the receipt to remember him. He asked for something romantic. Same wink-wink deal he gave the motel clerk. She thought he was, quote-unquote, a little slimy. He also bought a sandwich, roast beef on rye. They get him from a deli on the strip. Coroner bothers to open him up, they can confirm.
Milo said, 6:13 is a couple of hours before he checks into the motel. How did he spend the time?
Good point, said Biro. The liquor store's location says he was heading west from West Hollywood to Real Hollywood. I'll check along Sunset. Pharmacies for condoms, whatever else looks interesting. See if I can fill in some blanks.
Thanks, Raoul.
Hey, I just thought of something. The Hustler store's not far from the liquor store. Guy's all hyped up and ready to party with a chick. Maybe he did a stop and shop for a toy or something. Not that I'd know about stuff like that.
Heaven forfend, Raoul. You driving there or taking a jet?
Ha! Speaking of sex, none of the girls working the area around the motel know Corvin so far, so it doesn't look like he picked the place because he was a regular. I know they lie, but it fits with what the motel owner told me yesterday. Dr. Waris, call me Wally Singh, runs a discount dental practice in Koreatown, along with a whole lot of other businesses, keeps all his paperwork on the dental computer. Corvin's name doesn't show up prior to last night.
Alex suggested a party with his honey, a bit of naughty to spice it up. Notice the menu on the TV?
Cock-hungry housewives as choice number 3, said Biro. Nope, never saw it. Okay, I'm off. No luck at Hustler. There's always naughty lingerie and Fredericks. Speaking of Corvin's honey, I've got no feeling on whether she's taken alive or dead. Do you?
Who the hell knows, Raoul?
That's my daily affirmation, Milo.
Click. I said, there's a third possibility. She was allowed to leave because she was part of it, as in bait. His phone rang. He pointed to the screen. Dr. W. Macy at the county coroner. The conversation was brief. No need to open Corvin up beyond cracking his skull and pulling out 2 severely deformed 9mm slugs. That happens a lot with nines because they bounce around, which is why the lab likes casings. With none, a match to any prior was unlikely. What the pathologist did find interesting was an angle of entry suggesting the shooter was well above the victim.
"Tall victim," said Macy. "Carpet fiber on his knees, splatter 4 feet up the wall. I'm guessing kneeling and shot from behind."
Milo thanked him, asked him to email the prelim, hung up. I said, "Kneeling, shot from behind. Toss in no forced entry and it's execution 101. Maybe carried out by someone he knew and trusted."
He said, "Ms. Armani herself?"
Bait and hook.
"Get down, Snookums. I've got a surprise for you. That's cold."
someone with Corvin's self-esteem, it would have made things easy. His phone again. Petra. She said, no roots on the hairs from the bathroom because they're synthetic.
A wig.
Afraid so. DNA's possible if they got handled enough, but the lab says don't count on it. They did pull up prints, four sets plus Chet Corvin's, all in the bathroom. We're talking a serious wipe down in the bedroom. Locations were a glass shelf, the mirror, the rear of the sink near the wall, and the top of the toilet tank. Guess they don't clean that thoroughly. Blech. Three belonged to veteran Hollywood prostitutes. One died a few months ago of an overdose. One's in jail in Vegas. The third is a charmer named Ms. Piggy with an alibi.
Ironclad?
Titanium-clad, I'm afraid. During the time of the shooting, one of our plainclothes guys on the boulevard spotted her escorting a John toward a dive that makes the Sahara look like the Beverly Wilshire. Officer Jefferson was there because we've got a new prevention thing going, per the city council. Nip it in the bud rather than waste time with arrests. The customer was one of those hapless Scandinavian tourists. Gave Jeff attitude, offended by American prudishness. An African-American should know better than to oppress. Milo said,
life's better in the land of herring and darkness.
Ha! You're making me want to go out and buy a Volvo. Anyway, the idiot got the STD lecture, and Piggy got the speech we give the girls, which is, basically, next time you go to jail, which everyone knows is not true. Anyway, she was nowhere near the Sahara when Corvin got shot. The fourth set has yet to be identified. No match in APHIS. From the size, probably female. So, either a rookie who hasn't earned an arrest record, or a civilian girlfriend. Milo said,
fast turnaround. Thanks.
Petra said, thank yourself. I use your name on the request. Rank has its privileges. He said,
speaking of girlfriends,
and gave her the bait-hook theory. She said, I've been thinking about her, dead or taken alive. Didn't think of that. If the fourth print is hers, we're talking a female executioner with no criminal past.
Maybe she's kept her nose clean because she's really good at what she does.
Just what we need, a mastermind. That's a dismal thought, Milo. I guess anything's possible, but the personal angle's sticking in my head. Jealous spouse or boyfriend. The other thing is, my captain wants Corvin to be an extension of Braun.
Punting, said Milo.
No prob. I promise we'll work it like it's ours, which, yes, it should be. But we've got a situation here. Computer conversion of our records, it's a total nightmare. Constant freezes, glitches, data loss, nerds skulking around the station wreaking havoc.
Like I said when the phone company calls, happy to do the paperwork.
Appreciate it, Milo. One more thing. I found the person who took the 415 call. New civilian hire. Pretty clueless. She thinks the caller was a female, but she's not sure. It could have been a male with a high voice. I'm not sure she actually remembers anything, just eager to please. Anything else turns up, I'll let you know.
What do you think about Raoul's theory?
What theory? She said. Haven't talked to him all day. He's out in the field.
He found the store where the wine was sold, and time of purchase leaves a couple of hours to account for. Showing admirable initiative, your partner suggested the Hustler store as a possible stopover for the late Mr. Corvin.
Inspired. Raoul's over there now?
Should be.
Maybe that's why he's not answering his phone.
Concentrating on one thing at a time, kid.
I'll bet, said Petra. Can't wait to see how you write it up.
Chapter 23.
Nothing more that day until Milo phoned me at home just after 9 p.m.
Raoul's hypothesis confirmed, the crafty devil. Corvin purchased a pair of crotchless leopard panties at Hustler just after 7. That gives him an hour and some minutes for a low-stress rush-hour sunset cruise. He used the company credit card for the panties, too. Talk about chutzpah.
I said, with all the receipts he submitted, easy to bury a few items, and I'll bet the store didn't get specific on the invoice.
Bingo on that. They use number codes. Raul had to bug him to get the specifics. But still, it's nervy, no? I've got Sean back on Nevada tonight doing 4 hours of surveillance. Miss Chelsea takes one of her nocturnal strolls and actually goes into Bitt's house. I will be able to enter to do a welfare check, per the usually obliging Judge Edgar McCary and John Nguyen's backup opinion. But if she just knocks on Bitt's door, stands outside, and has a conversation, it's a no-go. Got 2 more weeks. Hopefully we'll close this mess before that.
I said, what happens then?
Chelsea turns 18. She's a consenting adult. Harder to make a case for anything. Meanwhile, I'm trying Bitt again. If his truck's there, I'm pounding his damn door until he gets a migraine.
I sat in my office and thought about Chet Corvin's final hours. Dominant, narcissistic, breezily confident, until he'd found himself kneeling on the floor of a cheap motel. The perils of too much self-esteem. The following day, just after noon, Milo dropped by looking sour but purposeful. He marched to the kitchen, flung the fridge open, took out eggs and whatever else he could find, and set about constructing a terrifying omelet. I said, no luck with Bitt.
Truck wasn't there. I knocked anyway, got the expected silence.
He waved a wooden spoon, used it to push a yellow mountain around the pan. A few flecks of egg landed on the floor. Blanche bounced over and gobbled them up.
He said, there you go, symbiosis.
More like exploitation, I said.
Huh?
What does she give you in return?
Oh, Pooch, you got a mean dad.
Blanche smiled up at him.
What does she give me? The restorative joys of visual beauty.
He turned off the gas, petted her, plated the mountain, brought it to the table, and began consuming. Blanche trotted to his feet.
Can I give her some more?
Please don't. Eggs make her gassy.
Daddy's mean and ecologically insensitive to the virtues of wind power.
Bending low,
he wasn't such a fuddy-duddy, we could get a government subsidy.
Straightening, he shoveled food. Blanche settled, closed her eyes, began snoring lightly.
Milo said, in terms of Bitt's movements, Sean logged him coming out once, around midnight, followed him to a 24-hour pharmacy in Pali Village. He came out with a small paper bag. Sean said his nose appeared swollen, and he didn't look happy. I'd like to think he's got a raging coke habit, but probably a cold and NyQuil. That coffee still hot?
I poured him a mugful.
He said, gracias. Sean left at 4 a.m., sometime between then and 9, when I showed up, Bitt left again and stayed away. He seems to be moving around more, but for all I know, he went to the doctor to get his sinuses reamed. Mole tried tonight again. I have energy. I'll come by when he leaves. Meanwhile, no night moves from Miss Chelsea.
His phone kicked in. New ringtone. A few bars of Puccini's Babbino Caro. Gorgeous piece of music. Shame to abuse it that way.
He said, hey, Sean, when'd you get in? Good for you. It did. One's better than nothing. I'm at Dr. D's place. Email it to him. We'll print it from his computer.
Forkful of omelet.
I told him to check my computer every hour. The rest of Corvin's corporate credit card records just came through.
You can't get downloads to your phone?
I can, technically, but it's iffy regulation-wise, he said. Department's still working out specifics on interfacing with personal devices.
My computer's okay?
He grinned. Your screen's larger.
As he washed the fry pan, I printed. 5 pages of fine print covering 3 billing periods that I brought to the kitchen. Chet Corvin had traveled extensively up and down the coast, charging business and first-class airline tickets, rental cars, meals, and hotels from San Diego to Seattle. No stops at or near Oxnard, Ventura, or Santa Barbara, which caused Milo to curse under his breath. At the bottom of the fifth sheet, the Sahara Motor Inn, the wine, merchandise at Hustler, and something Raoul had missed, a deluxe assort purchased at Haute EU Chaco, $93 and some change. I said, high-priced dessert? Milo said, candy's dandy, liquor's quicker. When in doubt, go for both. Haute European Chocolatiers had one location, the north side of Sunset, 1.3 miles east of the Hustler store. Open 3 days a week. Closed yesterday when Raoul had searched. The elite confectionery offered a pricey assortment of French macarons, Swiss sweets, and other continental temptations. Milo said, $93. Definitely a party. But why there? I said, maybe his girlfriend lives nearby. Hollywood Hills, Los Feliz, Silver Lake. Chet and Madame X, he said. He thinks he's in for fun, and she turns out to be Ms. Murderous. Or she got taken and ended up like he did. Let's learn about dessert. You drive. The shop was a 15-foot storefront sandwiched between two clothing boutiques, both featuring gray, cachectic mannequins and abbreviated dresses with S&M overtones, tight enough to highlight pores. By contrast, the chocolate store looked old school, with a yellow umbrella-shaped awning doming the window and a glass door printed in gilt script. The display window featured boxes of assorted candies resting in beds of tinsel. I said, refined sugar doesn't seem like a good fit for the size zero crowd.
Or this place caters to the worst dregs of humanity.
I looked at him. He said,
zombies, the evil undead. They eat what they want and stay skinny.
He pushed the door open. A bell tinkled. Inside, the air was creamy and sweet and cloying. A display case held more high-end sucrose nestled in little brown paper cups. Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll streamed. Performed by a string quartet. The woman behind the case smiled.
Hi, guys. How can I tempt you today?
Pretty, late 40s to early 50s, with long hair, blonde on top, black at the ends. A heart tattoo graced the left side of her neck, topped by inked Asian lettering that might mean something. Ebony gauges, the size of quarters, stretched her earlobes. The kids of tomorrow will have interesting grandparents. Milo flashed his badge along with a smile. The woman said,
we haven't had any problems recently. Should I be worried?
Recently?
The usual, you know, drunks and homeless making a mess in the morning. And a few months ago there was that burglary at Adrienne Ballou up the block. Should I be worried?
Not in the least, ma'am. We're wondering if you remember a specific customer.
How far back?
Day before yesterday.
I'm not senile. Come on. Who? He began describing Chet Corvin.
Yeah, Mr. CEO, she said. He got the deluxe assortment. Why are you asking about him?
He's a person of interest.
Well, he didn't interest me. Talk about inept.
In terms of?
Flirting, she said. Like it was expected of him. Like it was his usual, what do you guys call it? A priori?
Modus operandi.
Perfect smile.
That's it. He was a tool, winking and leering and showing off his Range Rover fob like that's supposed to impress me. My ex drove a Bentley and he was no catch. What did he do?
Any idea who he bought the chocolate for?
He sure wanted me to know, she said. Not the actual person, the fact that they were going to do you know what. Wink, wink. I expected him to start drooling.
She rolled her eyes. Like, that's special. Women come in here because they appreciate fine confection. With guys, it's either they're like him, out for some play, or they're trying to get on a chick's good side after doing something gross or stupid. No offense to you guys. I'm sure you treat your women great.
Milo smiled. You've got that right. He's a sensitive guy, and I revere my mother. So, what else can you tell us about Mr. CEO?
That's it. He's never been here before since I bought the place, and that's 4 years ago.
One-shot walk-in.
We get them, she said. Kind of like church or temple, you know. Atoning.
Milo showed her Hargis Braun's photo. Is he one of your customers also?
She studied the image. No. Who's he?
Part of an investigation.
What, there's some sort of middle-aged white guy thing going on?
Nothing scary, he said. Thanks for your time.
Can I give you guys samples?
Appreciate it, but we're on the job, Ms.
Nola. Aw, come on. I won't tell your mommies. Soft center or hard?
Eyelash aerobics.
Milo said,
I'm a sucker for caramel.
Then you're in luck. Ours is like Nirvana. We use creamery butter from the Alps. You, sir?
Anything semi-sweet.
Nola tossed her hair. Très sophisticated. Fishing two truffles out of the case, she dropped them in fluted paper cups. Here you go. I picked the color especially for you guys. The cups were a perfect match to the tan uniforms of West Hollywood sheriffs.
LAPD's blue, but Milo said, Great. Thanks, Nola.
Enjoy. Try them right now so I can see your reaction. I love to make people happy. I bit off half of my truffle. A hard shell encased something liquid, alcoholic, and nicely bitter. Maybe Campari.
I said, Great, and finished with a second bite.
There you go.
Milo's caramel was sheathed in milk chocolate, shaped like a teardrop, and dotted with white chocolate. He popped the whole thing into his mouth, jaws working on the caramel as he thanked her again. Oh, I love it, Noel. It's amazing. Would you mind if I showed you another photo? I'm sure it's nothing, but what the heck?
Why would I mind? Anything for you guys. You keep us safe.
Out came Bits' DMV shot.
Nola said, That's Trevor, the artist.
You know him?
I know his name is Trevor, and that he's an artist. He did me a drawing. I've got it in back. Want to see?
She returned with a 5x7 pencil sketch in a thin black frame. A pair of fluffy white rabbits feminized by long lashes. One animal was half the size of the other. Baby bunny smiling sleepily as it nestled in the refuge of its mother's curling body.
Nola said, I told him I had a daughter, and he left for like a minute, came back with paper and a pencil, and drew it right here on the counter. See, he signed it to me.
The inscription was near the bottom, beautifully printed, slanting forward, what a comic book artist might use for emphasis. To Nola and Cheyenne, may all your dreams be sweet. Best, Trevor.
She said, He just stood here and did it while I watched. Didn't erase once. I figured to give it to Cheyenne, but she thought it was silly.
Shrug.
She's 16. So I kept it for myself. You're not going to tell me he's a bad person, are you?
Pressing her palms together.
Milo said,
Not at all.
Then what?
I wish I could give you details, but like I said, nothing for you to worry about.
I'm not worried, but I am curious, said Nola. You have his picture along with that other guy, and you asked about that CEO sleazeball. Let's see how good I am at detecting. A gang of middle-aged white guys. Has to be a shady business deal. What, real estate? A Ponzi? My ex was... But you don't want to hear about that.
Her expression said she hoped we did.
Milo said,
How often did Trevor come in?
Just twice. when he did the drawing was the second time. That was right before last Christmas. The first was around a year ago. Look at these super smooth lines. That's pretty impressive, at least to me. Milo said, any idea who he was buying chocolate for? Someone super lucky. He put out some bucks, said Nola. Come on, what's up? Some sort of Enron thing? My ex thought they were a great company, invested some of our savings with them. That's why I'm here. Though I do love it, turns out.
No, Trevor's an artist, just like you said.
Last name?
Bit.
She phone Googled. Oh, with two T's. He's got a Wikipedia bio. Famous comic book artist? Is this worth something? I bet it is. Thanks, guys. eBay, here we come. How about some bonbons? Got them in the freezer out back. Milk chocolate for guava, dark for raspberry. With obvious pain, Milo said,
no thanks,
and headed for the exit. Before he got there, the door was pushed in hard, forcing him to sidestep. No apologies from the man charging forward, head down, shoulders tight. 30s, as emaciated as the mannequins next door, wearing blood-red skinny jeans, a scooped-neck orange tee, and electric blue high tops. His hair was buzzed at the sides, piled high on top. His beard was a black chunk of topiary. Milo muttered, undead. The new arrival raced to the counter.
I need something, Nola,
as if ordering a casket. She said,
oh, Richard, what did you do now?
Chapter 24. Back in the Seville, Milo said,
chocolate? A link between Corvin and Bit?
I said, what made you show her Bit's photo?
Wish I could say it was brilliant deducing, but just grasping.
He pulled a cigar out of his pocket, rolled it between his fingers.
Besides a sweet tooth, what the hell else did the two of them have in common?
Maybe nothing.
Did we just inhabit parallel universes, amigo? A fancy candy store they both happened to patronize?
There's another way to look at it. He sighed, put the cigar back.
Isn't there always? What?
Corvin's only been here once, but Bit bought gift boxes twice. The first time was around a year ago. Around could mean a couple of weeks, give or take. What happens in 2 weeks?
What? Oh, shit, he said. Chelsea's birthday? Bit bought her a present?
Maybe that and a box for Christmas. The connection to Chet could be nothing more than him seeing the chocolates in Chelsea's room and asking her about it. If she shined him on, he'd likely drop it. But what if he filed the store's name away and noticed it on his way to the Sahara? It jogged his memory.
You believe in that level of coincidence?
I believe there's a relationship between Bit and Chelsea. Her after-dark expeditions and his being so squirrely point that way. And those drawings we saw in Chelsea's room, all those pages of repetitive designs, might be her attempt to impress a real artist.
She digs Bit. He pretends to be impressed. Nasty stuff ensues in the studio.
He frowned.
You really think Corvin wouldn't push things with Chelsea if he saw high-end goodies in a shiny box? More to the point, Felice wouldn't?
From what we've seen, Chet and Chelsea didn't have much of a relationship. He called me in to see her without consulting Felice, used the girl to embarrass her mom and me. I don't think he told Felice much, period. Even if Felice did find out, she might prod a bit. But if Chelsea sank her heels in and refused to say, I think she'd have backed off, assuming it was a gift from a boy. Finally. The cigar reappeared. He bit off the tip, spat it out the window.
Anything's possible, but I'm still thinking the simple route. Like Nola just said, a gang of white dudes. Daddy, plus the weirdo next door, plus too-good-to-be-true guy named Hal.
I thought, the simple route, all from a box of chocolate, said, sure, and started the car. We were back in his office 35 minutes later. The rest of Chet Corbin's credit card history sat on his desk. Fewer charges on the remaining cards, but the same pattern, cities up and down the coast, a few more stops south in San Bernardino, Riverside, and San Diego. Hotels, restaurants, occasional charges for groceries and men's clothing. No alcohol, no chocolate, no lingerie. The last day of Corbin's life had been different, and I said so. Maybe because he was about to make a change, preparing to leave his old life behind and venture out with a new love. He poked the pile of charge records. This is business stuff. But romance could easily be buried in here. Book a single-occupancy room, someone sleeps over, who's going to know? And with a double meal charge, who's to say he didn't take a client out? As long as he kept it reasonable, no one would take a close look. He placed the forms in the murder book. I need those phone records. He checked with Binchy, Reed, the desk officer, the downstairs clerk. No messages from the phone company. The mail had come and gone, nothing. Snatching up his desk phone, he punched numbers, shook his head. This is Lieutenant Sturgis from LAPD, West L.A. I seem to keep missing you. Wondering about those logs I requested on a homicide victim. Chet, middle initial M, Corvin. A voice you might interpret as friendly if you couldn't see the way his facial muscles strained the bones below. He slammed the phone down.
At least I learned about a place for a good Christmas gift.
Rick likes chocolate?
Allergic, he said. I'm talking self-gratification.
At 8:30 the following morning, he called, sounding buoyed.
Phone logs got emailed just as I was about to leave last night. Can I bring them by?
When?
I'm parked outside.
I'd been playing guitar in my bathrobe out in the studio with Blanche. By the time I reached the front door, Milo was standing inches from the threshold, olive-drab vinyl attaché case in hand, his bulk blocking out most of the light. He forged in like a gust of wind, sat down in the living room. His hair was nearly tamed by some sort of product, his ravaged face razored as smooth as it was going to get. A brown sport coat woven from a nubby fabric that evoked a cheap couch went nicely with wheat-colored jeans and a yellow shirt new enough to sport box creases. Planning to go somewhere later. I said, Natty. He humphed and popped the case and took out a sheaf of papers. 6 months of phone calls on the personal cellular account of Chet M. Corvin. Each had been checked off in blue ballpoint. A few were margined by notes in Milo's hand. Hyatt, Portland. Embassy Suites, Tacoma. Firewood Cafe, Oakland Airport. Two numbers were circled repeatedly in red. 28 calls to and from a 310 listing over the past 2 months. 11 to the 909 area code were clustered during the last week of Corvin's life. Milo tapped the 28 caller.
Local, but disposable and expired. No way to trace. I was hoping Chet used the burner app on his phone to create his own temporary, but no such luck. Just your basic by-the-month dope dealer accessory.
I said, something to hide.
That girlfriend scenario of yours is looking better. And maybe we can find her. The 909 is in San Bernardino, a landline. I tried, no answer, no machine. But it's active. Any guesses?
Lake Arrowhead's in San Bernardino County. First time we met Corvin, he mentioned a weekend home there. He grinned.
Great minds. Yeah, I called Felice, she confirmed it. Said the family hadn't used the place since 2 winters ago. She wanted to know why I was asking. I said Chet seemed to be calling there, I had yet to find out why. But she got the point, became rather irate.
I said, The call dates say the relationship began at least 2 months ago in L.A. For the past week or so, he moved her to the family getaway, in preparation for his new life. He stood, bowed, sat back down. Felisa's anger worked in my favor. She gave me permission to go there and take a look. There's a local